Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Fantasy Team Advice Baseball Podcast.
Welcome to the Fantasy Team Advice Baseball Podcast, Episode 4 of the 2015 season. I'm your host, Joe DiRienzo, and today I'm joined by our head baseball writer on Fantasy Team Advice. It's Jamie Colangelo, and Jamie, thank you for joining us. I'm sure you're as excited as anyone is to have the baseball season right around the corner.
Absolutely. Good to be on with you, Joe. Let's talk some baseball.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a lot going on this week between getting ready for pitchers and catchers to report. We've actually got our writer's draft getting going. It started this past Thursday. We'll discuss that a bit later. We're in round four now of that one. If you want to follow along on Twitter, it is #LeagueBeforeTime. For those of you old enough to get that reference, hopefully everyone's old enough to get that reference. But, yeah, we're going to start here with the news and notes and some bad news to start the show. Victor Martinez was announced he has a torn meniscus in his left knee, undergoing surgery early next week. The timetable is very much unknown for when he's getting back. The Tigers are optimistic. They say a couple of weeks is reasonable to suggest for his recovery time, but that's the very optimistic, hopeful approach to Martinez. So we really don't know when he's coming back, how much the injury is going to affect him. So, Jamie, starting off here, where does Martinez fall in the draft with this news?
Well, Martinez was an interesting one to me in the first place. I was looking at his stats the other day, and the jump from 2013 to 2014 was staggering. I mean, a career high in homers, a career high in runs scored, career best K percentage, and his BABIP of 316 was actually lower than his batting average of 335. So, it's odd that in his age 36 season that he came on like that. The knee thing worries me a lot. He's had injury issues with it in the past. And like I said, he is 36. Current ADP is about the fourth round right now. I think you can safely drop him down a little bit from that, a couple of rounds. I'm starting to get off of him now. I think the big appeal for him this year was that he was possibly going to wind up being catcher eligible at some point through the year. They said he was going to catch some. I think that's done. No matter how much time he misses at the beginning of the season, they're not going to make him catch on bum knees. And first base is just so deep that he's starting to be more of a secondary look for me, unless he falls really far.
Yeah, I'm with you on this. The fact that he's definitely not getting catcher eligibility, there's no way they're going to make him recover from the meniscus and be like, by the way, squat for 9 innings a day every once in a while. That's just not going to happen. And like you said, that jump in his stats was staggering last year. It was the average jump, and it's obviously something he's had his whole career, a very good average, but all of the other numbers jump off of the board at you. And it's like, wow, where did this Victor Martinez come from? We haven't seen him in a long, long time. So I was skeptical to begin with, like you said. This adding on to that, I can't imagine being the guy to take the leap and draft him. Obviously, there is a chance that this meniscus injury is a couple of days to a couple of weeks in recovery, and then he can start rehabbing. He's good to go. But he's 36. He's not young. He has a chance of this being a pretty debilitating injury, and that's a chance I'm not willing to take in the first, eight rounds or so. Is that realistic?
Yeah, not for me. I mean, I saw in the FSTA experts draft that he went in the mid-fourth round, but that was long before this news, and I can definitely drop down a little bit more than that after this. And like I said, I'm starting to not even look at him because you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and in our draft, personally, I threw his name already, even though he hasn't been drafted, just to try to stay away from him.
Yeah.
Another guy that hasn't gone yet in our draft but has pretty solid stats coming into this season is still free agent James Shields. He has not signed anywhere yet. The Yankees have backed off. The Cubs have apparently come back into the picture. It's just a lot of confusion as to what uniform James Shields is going to be wearing next year. But if you're drafting and he's still a free agent, aren't you valuing James Shields just as good as he would be during the season?
For sure. He's a hard thrower and an innings horse. I'm also reading about a half an hour ago it came out, Scott Miller of Bleacher Report's reporting that talks are heating up between him and the Padres, and he's a pretty credible source for this kind of thing. So, you know, if you want to follow along with that, a move to Petco is about the best thing that you can do for his value. I'm a little concerned that his K per 9 has dipped. It's with 7.14 last year, but his 3.56 xFIP is right in line with his ERA, and he'll throw you 225 innings a year, and he is definitely someone that I have no problem being on my team, no matter what uniform he's wearing.
Yeah, I mean, he is a 200-plus innings guy. He's not going to get you the incredible strikeout numbers, but the ERA is going to be there for you, and if he moves to Petco, if those rumors are true, that's going to help his ERA out even more. So I have no problem taking the plunge on Shields, because it's not an if question. It's not, is James Shields going to get signed? It's when. It's what colors is he going to be wearing. So I really have no issue. Right now, his ADP, if I'm looking at this right, is 135, whereas he's being ranked in the 80s or 70s by writers. So I think the writers are significantly closer to where his correct value is.
I agree. 135, that's 12th round, if I'm doing the math right, in a 12th team league.
That's crazy,
yeah.
And there are plenty of steals on the pitching side of things, obviously, this year, as once again, pitching is incredibly deep. But if you can get a guy that's going, he went 230 innings or 240 innings last year, so the guy churns out innings. It's going to be a drastic effect on your ERA with that low threes number. So he's a great help, and if you can get him in a double-digit round, that's just phenomenal value.
Absolutely.
It has been a slow news week, because we are ending our news segment with the rumor that Andruw Jones, the one spells his name A-N-D-R-U-W, thinks he's ready to come back to Major League Baseball after spending 2 years playing in Japan. Jamie, this could be quick. Do we care?
No.
Nope. Nobody cares in the fantasy end.
I mean, even if he lands somewhere, he's going to be a fifth outfielder. He's got no fantasy relevance, no matter where he goes.
Honestly, I don't even know where to look to get his numbers while he was in Japan for these past 2 years, and I don't have the energy in me to go and do it because I'm not drafting
him.
So
don't waste your research time on that.
We're pretty okay letting that one. It's a good laugh to end our news segment, but we are going to move on here. We've talked a lot on this podcast about later round guys, young guys, injury guys, picks that you're not really sure what you're getting out of them. We're going to change things around here, and we're going to talk about the start of the draft, these early player draft values. We're going to use the average rankings on fantasypros.com between all the writers they have on there as our barometer here. We'll include a little bit of what we did so far in our experts draft with the various writers that we have going for us that we'll talk about later. We're going to start here at the top. Mike Trout is the consensus number one pick on Fantasy Pros. Every single expert that has put in their rankings has had Mike Trout number one on their list, which is pretty fantastic. It's not usual that you have a unanimous number one pick. Do you agree? Are you all on board Mike Trout? Good to go? Number one?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't really see the point in taking someone else. He's the only player ever to have surpassed a 900 OPS in his first three seasons. He's a stud in all five categories, and if you look at Fantasy Pros' rankings, he has not yet gone below number one, so people understand. I mean, you know, there are some very good players after him, but you don't know which one, and you know he's the top pick, so there's no point in getting cute, even if you hate the Angels. Our own KJ traded away his 12th and 13th pick just to get the number one pick, because it's the top pick. There's no question.
Yeah, he started off our writer's draft with a bang. He had the 12th overall pick. He traded the 12th and 13th pick for the number one overall pick to Seth Klein of Razzball. It was a hilarious way to get the draft started, but he committed to it. He wanted Mike Trout on his team, and he got him. You can see why. The guy, even if he doesn't steal the bases like he stole at the beginning of his career, you're still getting 15 to 20 steals with 35 homers, 100, 300, like on the five categories across. It's production that you're not going to get in many other places. And it's, like you said, 900 OPS his first 3 years. It's as sure of a thing as you can get, and there's no reason to get cute. Now, the next guy we're going to talk about is going to be someone who we're much more differing on in the community of fantasy baseball. Clayton Kershaw, the number one overall pitcher being ranked. His current ADP is number three overall. He's been ranked anywhere from 2 to 13 by the experts on Fantasy Pros. And it's an interesting case because we mention all the time how deep pitching is and how we are willing to wait on pitching because hitting is at such a disadvantage in this era. So Clayton Kershaw, where do you expect him to go off the board and where would you take him?
Well, Clayton Kershaw is someone that I never own. I would love to. I try and trading for him during the season all the time if I have a position of depth that I can afford to get rid of a top player, and I try and get him. But he's someone I never draft in the first round because I just don't do that. I understand that he's the best pitcher by far. I also understand the safety of taking him, that you know what you're going to get. But like you said, pitching is so deep. And some drafts you're getting David Price or Max Scherzer or Steven Strasburg, you can get them almost three full rounds later. And I really just can't pass up a first-round hitter when those options are available later. And Kershaw's peripherals are insane. And his 10.85 K per 9 is elite, but it's less than Kluber's, it's less than Darvish's, it's in line with Strasburg's and Scherzer's, it's a little bit above Price's, so it's not blowing them away. And I'm certainly not saying that Kershaw is not the best pitcher, because he is. If I had to pick one, it would be him 100% of the time, but based on his ADP, he's just not on my teams.
Yeah, he doesn't end up on any teams that I'm drafting because of the fact that I look at that top group of guys, and I don't know, I just don't know where I would stop thinking, yep, I want this hitter on my team, and start thinking, you know, I might as well start my team off with a pitcher, because all of them bring so much to the table in all of the hitting categories, and like you said, those guys you were mentioning, they're going in the third or fourth round, so you can get a ton of guys in addition to that pitcher who is comparative stats to Clayton Kershaw. They're not Clayton Kershaw, but they're pretty darn close, and they're close enough that you can build an additional team around them before drafting them. That's the part for me that makes me not end up with Kershaw on my squad.
Right.
And those guys going around Clayton Kershaw, it's really funny. This year, it's a lot of first basemen. Paul Goldschmidt is in the top grouping there. He's number five right now, but he gets ranked anywhere from 2 to 5. Miguel Cabrera, Jose Abreu, Jose Bautista is eligible at first, Edwin Encarnacion too. All these guys are getting thrown around in that conversation for the first round. But I don't really know what to do. They're being ranked in a different order in essentially every site that I look at. So the battle for the first baseman, do you agree with me that Paul Goldschmidt is at least number one of this group?
I do, for sure. And I think, who was it in our draft? Was it Brian?
Brian, yeah.
Excuse me, sorry. Brian Johnson of LeagueSafe.com took Paul Goldschmidt second overall in our draft, and I tweeted at him that I actually completely agree with that. He's my number one pick for sure of the first baseman, and if I was picking two, I would take him after Trout.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is I mentioned that not many people can compare to Trout's stats. The only one that has a shot is Paul Goldschmidt if he has his career season, because in 2013, 35 homers, 100 in RBIs and runs. He hit 300, and he had 15 steals. That's what Mike Trout is giving you right now. So if Goldschmidt comes anywhere close to that, that's the number two overall pick, and I don't think there's much conversation that has to happen after that. The question really is after Goldschmidt, because there's some questions that come up. Miguel Cabrera, obviously he's getting up there in age. His stats are changing. Last year, obviously not the stats that you wanted to see out of him, because only 25 home runs. Then you've got Jose Abreu, who had those second-half issues and then dramatically increased his batting average, and the two guys in Toronto. So what do you do for number two at first base?
Well, for me, that's going to play out with the spring training. If Cabrera is deemed 100% healthy, he's my number one of those three. There's still a little bit of question marks about him. I have no problem with Encarnacion. But I am not on the Abreu train this year as much as everybody else is. If you go over to fantasypros.com, I wrote an article last week on bold predictions in the AL Central, and my one for the White Sox was that Abreu would not be a top 25 player this year. And I know that's in the minority. I see where he's going in drafts. He went sixth overall in the first round of ours. He went third overall in the FSTA experts draft. But here are the numbers I'm going to throw at you, and take what you will from this, but he's not going to be someone I own this year based on his ADP. He had the second worst K per walk ratio of any hitter with over 25 homers, Chris Carter was the worst. He had a 354 BABIP, which was way over his average, and it suggests his regression, and it suggests that his power should be suppressed as well. I think with a year to study the books on him, pitchers are going to throw a ton more breaking pitches to him. His contact rate on fastballs was insane, and his contact rate on breaking pitches was brutal. If Cabrera is gone or if Cabrera is not healthy, I'm taking Encarnacion with his 279 ISO and 901 OPS over the question marks of Abreu in his sophomore year.
It's amazing because I was a Jose Abreu owner last year and I was thrilled with the fact that I owned him. Looking at the second half stats, everything dropped except for average, which skyrocketed because he lost that power stroke. He lost 100 points in his slugging percentage. He only hit 7 homers compared to the 29 before the All-Star break. It was a different hitter. It was a completely different hitter, and it seems like the league stopped throwing in the pitches that he could drive, and they started to figure him out a little bit more, which is a really scary thing to think about. If you're trying to draft a guy that early for the potential of 35 home runs, it doesn't look like Abreu wanted to hit 35 homers in the second half because he didn't have the ability to as much as he did hit that 350 average. So if you're going for the power like most of these guys in the first rounds have, you're looking for an Edwin Encarnacion guy or a Jose Bautista rather than Jose Abreu. I agree with you. His entire statistical output changed in the second half of the season. It was like the league figured him out.
Right, and like you said, I don't even think his upside, you know, even if he does continue the success, it's the same. His upside is the same as those guys you just mentioned, Encarnacion and Bautista. So I'd rather take the safety of them who you know are going to do it rather than Abreu who might not.
Yeah, and that's a good point. And I love what the Blue Jays have done with that lineup. They've got Bautista and Encarnacion, and now they've got Donaldson. They've got an enormous amount of power in the middle of that lineup. And pitchers won't be able to pitch around any one of them because they'll just have to face the next enormous 30-home run bat waiting in the on-deck circle. So I love the Blue Jays' bat this year. And those guys have a chance to be a drastic impact on your team, and Abreu is more of a question mark when it comes to that. So I guess you sort of answered my next question because Jose Abreu has that question mark value there. But I guess other than him, is there a player in the first two rounds of drafts around right now that you just don't understand why he's being drafted that high or you think he's going to not have anywhere close to that kind of value?
I'm going to say for this one, I'm going to say Madison Bumgarner. Not that I don't think he's a great pitcher. I think his value is being amped a little bit too much by his World Series performance. In the FSTA draft I keep referencing, which if you search for it, you can see the entire draft that took place in the conferences in Las Vegas a few weeks ago. He was the first pick of the second round, and he went ahead of pitchers like Sale, Price, Strasburg, Kluber, all who have much better K rates. I'm also a little bit concerned about those extra innings he threw. I know he's young and injury is less of a risk for him, but he did throw a lot of extra innings in the playoffs. He has a 9.07 K per 9, which is very good, close to elite, but there are several pitchers going after him that are better in that regard. And he did give up 21 home runs last year, which is, for the innings he pitched, is 0.87 home run rate is not bad, but for that ADP it is. So he's a little bit overvalued for me. I'll take him on my team, but not if I have to take him in the second round.
Yeah, Bumgarner is one that I was actually shocked by. We asked the fans this week to submit some questions, and the first question that we got was Clayton Kershaw or Madison Bumgarner, and that shocked me because that makes me think that postseason run that Bumgarner had was supposed to just carry over, and he's supposed to be that all of 2015 long, which just isn't possible to me.
Yeah, that question right there is a point proven that he's being overvalued a little bit. You're right.
Yeah, and he in the rankings, I don't think he's being terribly overvalued because writers' ranks have him in the 20 to 30 range, which is more reasonable. It's around where those other guys are ranked, which is where he belongs, not in the discussion for that Kershaw first-round pick.
Right.
If I had to pick a guy that I think is a little bit overrated, I believe that I would have to go with Robinson Cano. Now, I understand the likelihood that he can increase his production over in Seattle after a year in there and getting used to that stadium, but the home run production compared to the rest of the guys in the first round, usually you get homers, or steals or a little bit of both along with a good average. Cano's got the average, but he doesn't steal bases really. He gets about 10. His homers have dropped every year for the last 3 years, and I just really don't see the benefits of drafting him with a first or very early second-round pick at this point.
Well, I took him in our writer's draft. I definitely took into account the concerns that you brought up there, and you're absolutely right. 14 homers was alarming last year for him. So that's why I backed up my next two picks. I took Adam Jones and Corey Dickerson with my second and third round picks, trying to guarantee myself a couple of upper 20s, 30 home run players just to back that up and bank on the 300 average with Cano. But Cano's an interesting one this year. That could be egg on my face or, you know, it could help. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, you're on the side of the majority on this one. I think I'm one of the few that doesn't really have him as high as most do. I just am more concerned with the fact that he doesn't provide in those categories that those earlier round picks seem to. But the way that you built your team after getting him, you provided that power that he didn't exactly guarantee. So I think you ended up making the most out of that pick, and I think it made more sense at the point in the draft that you got him in. Flipping this conversation around here, we talked about the guys that we don't think deserve to be as highly ranked or highly drafted as they're going. Who do you think is not being given enough credit and deserves to be in the discussion for an earlier round pick than they're being?
Well, it's odd the player I'm going to tell you for this, because last year, if you had asked me who was being overhyped, I would have said this guy. And I think this year he's being underhyped, and that's Bryce Harper. Last year,
I knew you were going to say that. It's so funny.
Did you? Yeah, it's funny just to watch the trends of his ADPs from last year to this year. Last year he was going 6th or 7th overall, and I was telling anybody that would listen to not take him there. That's a sucker bet. He's got injury issues. His power numbers are not deserving of that spot. But right now I'm looking, and he's going in the earliest in the end of the second round, which I think is where he went in our draft. His ADP is closer to the mid-third round, which I think is a great value for him, because if he can stay healthy, he's got 25-25 upside, which that kind of production dries up once you get into that form of the draft. His line drive rate is consistently over 20%. His home run to fly ball rate is a career 16.6%. He had, you know, in 2012, he had 22 homers and 18 steals in 139 games. 2013, 20 homers, 11 steals in 118 games. So if he can stop crashing into walls like an idiot, you know, and stay healthy for the year, he should put up big numbers. I mean, this is really it. If he doesn't do it this year, then we're going to have a different conversation. But I'm on him this year.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is people probably think, oh, it's been a couple years now and he hasn't done it. He's past that, so young that there's still an incredible ceiling. He's not old. He's barely older than me, and I just graduated college. So I think he's got some time to figure this out. Last year, in the last 2 months of the season, he had 10 home runs. And he didn't steal bases last year, which was a bit of a concern, but he was hurt for most of the year, and he was just kind of battling that. So I think that was more of a decision not to test it. And it was not as much him changing his game, because he's got the speed to do it. He's got the aggressiveness to do it. And I think if you add that in addition to the homers that he's been hitting, and he's trying to really ramp that up, it seemed like the end of last year he was starting to figure it out more before the year ended. So I'm excited to see what he does this year in that the winning Ready Nationals team, while they're trying to really push, they got Scherzer. They're changing their team around a little bit, and they're really – that top team in the NL East. So I'm excited for Harper as well. That's funny, because that was going to be my pick. So I'm going to go a little bit deeper to try to figure out which guy I want to give a little shout-out to try to get some more love. Let me just take a look a little deeper in my rankings here. Let's talk about – actually, I'm going to go higher, because Adrian Beltre is the guy that I drafted in the end of the second round of our draft. And I think he is one of those guys that I think never gets enough love.
He was my other choice. I went with Harper, but he was my other choice.
Never, ever gets enough love, and he does the same thing every season. Last year was his down year, and he didn't have a ton of home runs, but he led the Rangers in every hitting category. The only thing he didn't lead in was doubles, because Elvis Andrus beat him out by, like, 4. It was a hilarious stat line to look at, and he had no team around him. He was really doing it by himself, and it must have been incredibly frustrating with Prince Fielder going down, Shinsu Chu going down. It was a lot of, like I said, frustration for him, and I think Beltre is a guy that year in, year out, hits around 300, gives you the power, gives you the counting stats, and never gets enough credit for it.
Nope, I totally agree. He was when I saw this question, I was deciding between the two of them. So I'm right with you on that one as well. He's definitely underrated this year.
Yeah, and last one here for our early draft discussion. We do have one question from the fans. Russell from Facebook asked, he asked the Clayton Kershaw Bumgarner question, but he also asked about Giancarlo Stanton versus Andrew McCutchen, which is the other guys that are in that discussion for the top five, along with Goldschmidt and Mike Trout. So if you were given the chance, if they were the two guys on the board and you had to choose between them, Giancarlo or McCutchen?
Well, I'm going to go with Stanton out of the two of them, and I thought that Michael Florio of Roto Experts took him fifth in our draft. I believe McCutchen had already gone, too. I thought that was a steal. In this post, if you want to call it post-steroid era, it seems like they've cleaned it up a lot, but, I mean, power numbers are down, and power is at a complete premium now. So I am paying for the guy that, one of the very, very few guys that has 40-plus home run upside the majors. He also stole 13 bases last year. There's talk, you know, that he's going to be a little gun-shy because his last at-bat was a ball to the face, which I can surely understand, but his plate discipline is constantly improving. They added D. Gordon. Christian Yelich is coming on big. Marcell Ozuna is coming on big in the surrounding spots of his lineup. So McCutchen is a great player, but I've really got to go stand for the power of the two.
See, and it's funny because Florio only got Stanton because I ended up passing up on him and taking Carlos Gomez, who that's how I ranked them. I ranked them McCutchen, Gomez, Stanton, but it's because I end up drafting in a rather different way. I end up trying to maximize the across-the-board ability on that early going, and Gomez gives you that additional 30-plus steal potential. And I'm enamored with Carlos Gomez after his change to Milwaukee and the ability for him to switch from an underperforming everything guy to the aggressive 20-plus home run, 30-40 steal, 280 average guy that he's turned into. But the fact that Stanton is one of the few guys that has the chance to lead the league in home runs is reason enough why it makes no sense for me to pass up on him, and it's why he is such a highly touted, highly talked about guy this season. I completely understand you ranking him ahead of McCutchen.
I have Gomez ahead of both of them, actually. So since you mentioned him,
great.
I have him third overall. So
awesome. So,
so if he was in the question, I might answer
one.
That different. Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how this writer's draft turns out. Like I said earlier, you can follow it the entire thing along on Twitter. If you search the hashtag before time, it is one word, and it is writers from everywhere from Fantasy Team Advice. There's about five of us from Fantasy Team Advice, four or five writers from Razzball, and we've got a couple of Roto Experts drafters as well. That is going to do it for us here on the Fantasy Team Advice Baseball Podcast. Thank you all very much for listening. Jamie is going to be writing updates and little summary articles as this draft goes on, so take a look out for that. Our baseball coverage is getting ready to go on fantasyteamadvice.com. We also have all the daily fantasy sports stuff you can possibly need. Jamie going through every day for all the basketball stuff, and it's a really great read if you guys get the chance to look at that. So, again, thank you all very much for listening. We will be back next week. For Jamie Colangelo, I am Joe DiRienzo. Thank you all very much for listening.